You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
You know, when I got home from work yesterday, my son asked me if he could play PlayStation, and I said, sure, one game. And I know what he means when he wants to play PlayStation. He wants to play the college football game. So he played the game, and the final score was 100-0. He's all about, you know, not he's at that age, he's six. He doesn't want to be competitive. He just wants to score points. I'll be dead gum if we didn't see the same game play out in real life a couple of hours later as Arkansas beat Little Rock 70-0 in a game that only lasted 50 minutes, by the way. Just imagine what Arkansas could have done last night at War Memorial Stadium had this game been allowed to go 60 minutes. As it is, it's the fifth largest win in school history in terms of blowout wins, third most total yards they've ever had. It's the largest margin of victory they've had in 96 years. The Razorbacks are 1-0. They beat UAPB. You know, the question yesterday was, can they cover? Yeah, they can cover. They covered in the first half. They're leading 49-0 and win by 70. Matt Jones, I'm here in Fayetteville. I did not go to the game last night because I got to be here on set, but Christina Long was there and Ethan Westerman were there from WholeHogSports.com. And they join us from high above Markham Street in downtown Little Rock this morning from their penthouse suites. Christina, Ethan, thanks for being here.
Yeah, of course. We are living in luxury for sure in Little Rock.
Hey, just, I mean, as being there, was it as bad in person as it looked on TV?
It was pretty bad. I mean, once you got to the point where you were realizing that they were really going to score on every drive and that they weren't going to let up, it was interesting. I'd never really seen it like that. Ethan, I don't know what it felt like for you.
Yeah, no. After the first couple drives, you knew exactly where this night was going, and it was going however Arkansas wanted it to go.
It just felt like the only team that was going to stump Arkansas last night was themselves, right? I mean, UAPB, we get word before the game about 30, 45 minutes before kickoff that UAPB had worn, quote, illegal uniforms. They wore their black uniforms, their home uniforms, and they didn't get permission to do that. You've got to have written permission from the host team to do that. The conference has to approve it as well to say that, you know, the uniforms contrast enough. Like, for instance, Arkansas and Missouri, a lot of times when they play in Fayetteville, Missouri, whether black or last year, they wore their gold uniforms in Fayetteville. But they get pre-approved authorization for that. Arkansas declined the penalties. They declined the 15-yard penalties. They declined, I think, the penalty where UAPB was going to have to take a timeout at the beginning of each quarter as part of this. I mean, Christina, it was like they knew what they were about to do to UAPB, and there was, you know, why humiliate them any further?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, somebody pointed out, I think it might have been you, Matt, when we were texting during the game, was this had happened the last time they played on a Thursday in Little Rock against FAMU, right? And did they accept the penalties then?
They did, yeah. They accepted the penalties, and I think Florida A&M had to use a timeout at the beginning of each quarter. And that was different because Florida A&M, they didn't wear their home jerseys. What they did that night was that they had white jerseys, and they had this real faint orange outline around white numbers. And so you couldn't see the jersey numbers there. And that was the penalty. So this rule in the NCAA rule book, and you got to get, you know, real deep down in the weeds to find this, but basically it's got, you know, a few different bullet points of what you can and cannot do, what's acceptable as it relates to uniforms. And then, you know, the penalties typically are the same regardless of what the actual infraction is.
That's even crazier because imagine having a cool uniform made that you think looks really great, and then you get out there and it's like, we can't read the numbers and you're going to be penalized if you wear this.
They had to have known. I mean, I think Arkansas, they communicated to them beforehand, hey, we're wearing our red jerseys. You're going to be expected to wear your white jerseys. That was just, I don't know, maybe that was just a precursor of what was to come. Arkansas, they absolutely dominated UAPB. I mean, we'll just run through a few of the numbers. 10 for 10, 10 possessions, 10 touchdowns. That has never been done before at Arkansas. According to ESPN, no Division I team has done this in the last 20 years, where they've scored on their first 10 possessions of the season. Arkansas, they get 687 yards of total offense. Only two other times in program history have they had more yards of offense. Most they've had since Darren McFadden's junior year in 2007 when they beat North Texas real bad in Fayetteville. And then UAPB, they're held to 130 yards And they could not run the ball at all against Arkansas. 7 rushing yards on 23 attempts. That's a minus 3.3 yard per attempt average. It was total domination. And, you know, when Arkansas beat Western Carolina down in Little Rock last season to start the year, it was kind of a similar, you know, feeling. It was a blowout victory. They win 56-13. But there were red flags raised in that game. They couldn't run the ball. They could only run it for, you know, less than 3 yards per carry. And that was a warning that they were going to struggle running the ball the rest of the year, and they did. I don't know what you're worried about with Arkansas coming out of this game against UAPB. It doesn't mean that there's not issues, and I'm sure Oklahoma State's going to expose some things when they play in Stillwater next weekend. But I don't know that, you know, there's any hand-wringing really this morning, because they just thoroughly outplayed UAPB in every facet of the game, whether it be passing the ball, running the ball, run blocking, special teams, defense. They beat them soundly. Sam Pittman, the only thing that he could have to kind of somewhat complain about after the game was the fact that Arkansas had 6 penalties for 48 yards, Christina.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly like you said, and that was what they needed. I mean, this is what FCS opponents, oftentimes, not all the time, because not all of them are the same. And UAPB is not an FCS team that has been a good team. I mean, they won 2 games last year. So it's not like you're playing, it's not like you're Colorado playing North Dakota State last night, or was it South Dakota State?
North Dakota State.
Like, you know, that's a program that's historically good and has recent success. So this was not that. I mean, you will have FCS teams that put up good games, and we'll see more of them this weekend. But with UAPB, I mean, this is what Arkansas was supposed to do, and it was good to see them do it as far as optimism for the rest of the year, especially now that they have longer time to rest to get ready for a huge game at Oklahoma State. You know, they didn't overlook UAPB. They did what they needed to do, took care of business. And now they can move on to this huge test in Stillwater.
We'll have Rocky Boyman, who was on the call on ESPNU last night, with us a little bit later to talk about what he saw from Arkansas UAPB. I want to tell you, you can go to wholehogsports.com right now and read all of our content from the game. We were up like raccoons through the middle of the night getting this ready for you. Analysis, commentaries. Richard Davenport's got a great recruiting column online this morning. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. Ethan, the offense, you know, we talked about this yesterday on the podcast and the Petrino effect. Is it Petrino that was the reason that they had the offensive success last night, or was it the fact that UAPB was just so bad defensively? You know, we were talking about this. This isn't really that uncommon for them to have a loss this big. This isn't even their worst loss of the last decade.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you score on every possession of the game, the offensive coordinator needs a little credit. I mean, I think Sam Pittman said it last night, like, that, I don't care who you're playing, that's really tough to do. The fact that I believe ESPN Stats said that was the first time in the past 20 years a team has scored on their first 10 possessions. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of teams have played subpar FCS opponents. Petrino definitely deserves some credit for the offensive success last night. I mean, they clearly believed they could score every time they touched the ball. I mean, they were 9 for 9 on third down attempts. That's another really difficult thing to accomplish. But I think that if anything last night, what we learned was that as long as Petrino is, you know, on the sideline as the Razorbacks offensive coordinator, he is not thinking about anything other than getting the end zone. He is wanting the 6 every single time.
I wrote that story about a week and a half ago for our tab preview in the newspaper, and it ran on our site too. And I ended it with this quote from Taylen Green, and he said, with Bobby Petrino, we believe that we're going to score every time we take the field. And, you know, you kind of think that's hyperbole, but lo and behold, that's what they did last night.
No, that's exactly what they did. And, you know, it became more clear on that last drive when, you know, whenever Taylen Green had that just kind of acrobatic highlight reel scramble. I would love to see how much yardage he actually covered on the field, because he went horizontal, vertical. I mean,
he started about 10 yards backward. He started about 10 yards backward, and then he goes from the right hash mark over to the sideline, and then he ends up inside the left pylon in the front of the end zone. Yeah, he probably, and they've got those catapult systems, so you can go back and check how much he ran on that play. But yeah, it well over 100 yards.
But my point being that on that drive, you knew you knew from the moment Arkansas got the ball, hey, they're trying to score right here, because mm-hmm. Bobby was calling up deep passing plays. Even that scramble by Taylen Green, I mean, it was a clear designed passing play. Mm-hmm. And he even said it after the game. He knew as soon as he started to take off, because it happened with 9 seconds left that he scored. He was like, oh, wow, I either have to score or get out of bounds, or else this is going to go to the half. And lo and behold, he was able to make something out of nothing and find his way in the end zone.
Green, 16 of 23 for 229 yards and two touchdowns through the air. And that was after a little bit of a shaky start. He didn't look great the first couple of drives, but then he settled in on both of those possessions where he threw touchdown passes. He went 3 for 3 on those drives. And then, you know, as we mentioned, what he did with his legs, 88 rushing yards on 6 attempts, a couple of more touchdowns. He had 2 runs of 30 yards or longer. And it wasn't just Green, Christina. I mean, it was the entire running game. JaQuindon Jackson goes over 100 yards, and he sat basically from about the mid-second quarter on. About everybody, it felt like, who touched the ball scored, maybe with the exception of DeBinion, who was real limited. Tyrell Reed scores a touchdown. Braylon Russell scores a touchdown in his first game as a Razorback. I was real impressed with a couple of the runs that he had. Rodney Hill had a touchdown in the first quarter. The run game was really good, and I think that's an encouraging sign for Arkansas, because, as you wrote, they didn't have a lot of success running the ball last year. They had 8 touchdowns last night against UAPB. They had 9 all of last season.
Yeah, I mean, it was – when I realized that stat, I was so surprised by that. I went and checked, you know, I double-checked the numbers for last season. I was like, there's no way. They only had 9 rushing touchdowns all year, and then now they've almost equaled that. But I mean, I think, and what I wrote last night was, it seemed, I imagine it was pretty cathartic for people that watched them struggle to run against Western Carolina in the opener, and then for the rest of the season, because that was supposed to be a strength. And I know, you know, Rocket Sanders had injury stuff and was kind of off and on, and it wasn't the season people expected him to have. But when you entered last season expecting Arkansas to have this great run game between your quarterback and your star running back, and then you don't have that, seeing it get off to a better start, even though it is UAPB, they have to carry it on the road. They have to do it against, you know, bigger, better opponents. But starting off this way after the harbinger of what was to come against Western Carolina last season was a good sign, I think. And getting those other running backs in the mix too, because, you know, JaQuindon Jackson, he had a little bit of an injury in preseason practice. He's been fine ever since. He had some injury stuff last year. You know, we've already seen Rashad DeBinion be limited with some injury. So being able to show that, okay, there are other guys in this room that can do it. And one thing Pittman said was he really likes this room because he feels like they have guys with different skills. They have some lighter, speedier guys, some more bowl you over kind of guys. And I think they can feel really optimistic about getting all those guys quality work in this game. And then now knowing that they have all these, this variety of tools they can use when they need, if they need to, and also just when they want to.
And you mentioned the injury to him. I mean, that was one of the questions about him going into the game, is just how healthy is he? He missed some time in the preseason. Not a whole lot, I don't think, but, you know, the ankle injury has been something that, you know, I think there's been, they've taken care of it. Maybe that's the way to say it, but it didn't look like the ankle bothered him at all.
Right. I mean, and I asked him after the game, you know, he had an injury last season where it was a low ankle sprain that kind of turned into a foot injury with like a tendon in the bottom of his foot. And he was basically playing through a foot and ankle injury all of last season and still put up like 700 yards. And I asked him, you know, now that you're playing healthy, just how did it feel to be able to run all over the field like that? And he said, I felt like me again, you know? So I think that was something that was really important for him and probably like his own confidence. And being able to play, I assume, relatively pain-free, at least compared to last season. And then for fans, you know, there were some questions about if he would be fully healthy. And then it turned out that Rashad DeBinion was the one that wasn't fully healthy. And we don't really know what the injury is there, but he missed about, they said he's been practicing, but not full go the way that they would want someone to if they were going to start a game and get a lot of carries. So that was why he was a little bit limited.
Usually when you pitch a shutout, the story is about the defense the next day. And all we've talked about so far is offense, 10 drives, 10 scores, 687 yards and on, 70 points. Ethan, the defense, I thought, looked really good last night. UAPB did not have, and again, you've got to measure this with the realization of who they are playing and how bad they outclassed UAPB at every position across the field. But with that said, UAPB did not get a first down that was not penalty aided until their fourth drive of the game. I think they only got 6 first downs the entire game, We mentioned the run defense, how good it was. UAPB, this defensive line that Arkansas thinks could be a strength for them with players like Landon Jackson and Nico Davale and Anton Junkaj and others, they did to the UAPB defensive front what you feel like they have to do to them in order to feel good about what they're going to look like down the road.
Yeah, and I think I wrote this in my takeaway story that's on our website, is that it's telling to me that the furthest down the field that UAPB ever got was the 27-yard line. Like, it's not that they just pitched a shutout. It's the fact that UAPB never even got in the red zone. Like, they weren't on the – they were never even on the doorstep of getting in. And I think in a game like this, I mean, there's – of course, I think we're going to hit on it a little bit later. There's always the discussion of should you even be playing these lower teams like this. But the truth is this. It was on the schedule. It's who they played, and they did exactly – they left no – like serious like concerns. And I think that's the biggest win here whenever you're talking about defense at large, is you don't want to walk out of a UAPB game with some concerns. And they just kind of checked every box yesterday. I mean, will that translate to week two versus Oklahoma State? Will that translate into SEC play? Who knows? Like, we don't know. It's not a great, you know, barometer for how good the defense is. But week one, they can check the box if they did exactly what they needed to do, and probably even beyond that.
Special teams, it was a good night for special teams. You had the new long snapper, Austin Noe, never heard his name during the game. So, you know, that's a good thing. Saw Ramsey kicking, which I think maybe surprised people a little bit that he was the first team kicker. And then, you know, we talked about this on the podcast yesterday. These are the games where you expect punt return touchdowns, and they had one from Isaiah Satania that was called back. They could have had one from Bryce Stevens had he not tripped up at about the 4-yard line on the turf, and then it gets called back because of penalties. So the special teams penalties, I think that's where Pittman was coming from, Christina, in terms of being frustrated with the penalties last night, because those were two big plays in the return game that were called back because of penalties. And then Satania, he also had a big gain, a 42-yarder called back, a reception because of another penalty. But overall, you know, again, special teams, you think they're going to be fine in a game like this. They were. I do want to get your thoughts, though, on Ramsey kicking over Matt Shipley and what went into making that decision.
Yeah, I mean, I was a little surprised by that. I kind of have wavered on my prediction for kicker throughout the year. You know, obviously they get Shipley, and it's pretty clear, like, they brought him out of the portal, you know, after the season to be their kicker. And then he struggles in spring, and there's a concern, and they bring in Ramsey. And then I was like, okay, well, if they're going to bring in another guy, they're probably feeling like they want that to be the guy. And then it kind of became, well, is he here to kind of, like, you know, be a backup option for Shipley, and also to kind of press Shipley forward and force him to develop a little bit. And then it became Ramsey, you know, I was kind of leaning toward Ramsey, and then Ramsey had a rough practice and missed a bunch of kicks, but, oh, he had a groin injury, so that's why it happened. And then I was back to Shipley, and then they come out and it's Ramsey. And so I was a little surprised, especially given we didn't know what the status mm-hmm. with the groin injury was. I mean, we knew Pittman had told us that he was back and he was, you know, kicking, but, you know, that could be a nagging thing. We weren't sure. And so I was a little bit surprised from that standpoint. It'll be interesting to see. It was, you know, since they didn't take any field goals, and they also didn't punt, we didn't see any punting. So we haven't seen Devin Bale in action with that yet, now that mm-hmm. they have the new punter there. But I was a little surprised with Ramsey, but I'll be interested to see what they do in a game like Oklahoma State, where you will probably be trying some field goals, mm-hmm. and who they run out there, if it's still Ramsey, if they kind of switch it up, if there's any kind of, like, how short a leash they have with whichever guy they run out there, knowing that they have that other option, will definitely be something to watch.
How many times can Arkansas score this year before they have to punt? That's something to watch when they go to Oklahoma State. I want to tell you about Hogs Illustrated. You can see the new one right here with Daylon Green on the cover. Ethan had a feature story on him, the cover story in this week's edition. You can stay out on top of all your Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app. It gives you complete access to our website at wholehogsports.com. Monthly subscriptions begin at $17. You can join now at hogsillustrated.com/subscribe or call 479-684-5509. Much more to come on our show. As we mentioned, Rocky Boyman coming up a little bit later. When we come back, are these types of games good? Like what does Arkansas get out of playing a team like UAPB? We'll have that discussion, but first a word from our sponsors.
LPGA Week in Northwest Arkansas returns September 23rd through the 29th for the 18th consecutive year. Watch former Razorbacks and 2024 Olympians Maria Fassi and Gabby Lopez compete against the world's best female golfers at the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship, presented by P&G at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers. The NWA Championship is so much more than a golf tournament, with something for everyone to enjoy and activities for fans of all ages. Daily tickets are only $10, and kids 17 and under get in free with a ticketed adult. Get your tickets today at nwachampionship.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our September lineup at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. Beginning on September 4th, that's next Wednesday, Kevin Trainer is going to speak to us. He's a longtime administrator for the University of Arkansas, also president of used to be called COSIDA. It's the communications group of professionals in college sports. So he'll be on September 4th. Later in the month, Brandon Marcello of 24/7 Sports on September 11th, Jordan Weber, the Arkansas gymnastics coach, on September 18th. And Hunter Yurachek will be with us on September 25th. You can reserve your seat now for all of those luncheons, plus our luncheons later into the fall. OzarksTix.com, OzarksTix.com. All right, Arkansas and UAPB have played two times in the Sam Pittman era, and Arkansas has outscored UAPB in those two games 115-3. That is notable on its own. They've only done it in seven quarters. They played two 10-minute quarters after halftime last night. When they played in 21, they shortened the second half quarters to 12 minutes in the third and the fourth quarter. So you take those two games away, and you actually take 16 minutes of game time away, and they still outscored this team by 112 points. It's a total mismatch. I feel like it was more of a mismatch last night than it was even in 2021, which is saying something because Sam Pittman had a pretty good football team in 2021. Now, things can change with UAPB, obviously, from one year to the next. Huge mismatch in this game. I say this all the time, that in the FCS, there are tiers. I think a lot of times people look at FCS teams and they say, well, you know, all you kind of group all of them into the same box. You can't do that. I mean, look at the Colorado game against North Dakota State last night. Look at Montana State going to an FBS team at New Mexico and winning their first game. Watching Stillwater this weekend, watch how well South Dakota State will play Oklahoma State. Should probably be a pretty good game. If you're going to continue these FCS games, and they're going to continue because teams want these games, they need the win, getting bowl eligibility is such a big deal to a team, and then once you get bowl eligibility, kind of, you know, raising your profile within the teams that are bowl eligible so you can get a higher tier bowl. That's why these FCS games are played in part, not to mention, you know, there are other things like you don't have to pay as much for the games. You get players more game experience by playing these games. So I understand why they're played. But, man, if you're going to play an FCS game, Christina, go find a better FCS team than UAPB, because this is two times where it doesn't even look like they belong in the same state, let alone on the same field.
Yeah, I mean, it is hard because it's that symbiotic relationship of, okay, the FCS teams get money out of this and the FBS team gets the presumed win or the early season kind of warm-up game before they go around the rest of their schedule. So I don't think it would go away. And I know you said that makes sense. But I do feel like it's hard to know. These games get scheduled so far in advance. And UAPB, you know, not a historically dominant program or anything, but you can't know that they were going to be coming off a 2-10 season and that they were going to be near the bottom of all of FCS.
But I think you can.
A couple years ago, what?
I think you can. And you realize
maybe you can.
You realize maybe in 2018 they lost a game 90-6 And that was to another FCS team. That was to another FCS team. They lost to South Dakota State in 2018. Granted, really good program, but they lost that game 90-6. This wasn't even their worst loss in the last decade.
Okay, yeah, you're right. So with UAPB specifically, I mean, I look back at like the Missouri State game. That was a good FCS team to schedule. I know they won't be FCS for much longer, but that was a good one. They were a good team. It was the Bobby Petrino team. They gave Arkansas a good game. It's hard sometimes because there's a ton of FCS teams, but there's not that many Missouri States or, you know, Montana States to go around. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of run into playing that game. I like that Arkansas schedules in-state teams now. I mean, I don't think anybody was excited to watch, you know, the helmets of Arkansas and UAPB meet, you know. I don't think that had like a lot of draw, but I do like that they're playing in-state teams now, because I meant to say this when we talked a little bit about some of these in-state games the other day on the podcast. You know, we talked about how there's no part of the Little Rock problem is they're not getting good games in Little Rock, and there's no sort of passion about the matchup itself. And I think part of that is because there's no in-state rivalry, because A, there's no team on the same level as Arkansas being like a power program, but even still, they didn't get to play for so long that there was no chance for any kind of rivalry or passion to come up, you know? So that's why I'm excited about Arkansas and Arkansas State next year. I think that's cool. I know that's not FCS, but I think that's a cool game. But going back to the FCS point, I do think when you're going to schedule FCS, you have to try and schedule some better opponents, but it is hard when there's only so many to go around.
I feel like you can reach bowl eligibility for the most part by scheduling group of five teams instead of these FCS teams. I mean, now I know Arkansas's had their issues with the North Texas and Western Kentuckys and Colorado States of the world recently, but I think for the most part you can go down and you can dip into the Sun Belt and you can dip into the MAC and play some of these teams and still accomplish that. I don't know. I got an issue with SEC FCS games because as time goes on, those games just become more and more and more lopsided. I mean, for the most part. And there are some games, like you mentioned, Arkansas-Missouri State a couple of years ago. That's an outlier. For the most part, this is maybe not 70-0, but, you know, the total mismatch before halftime, that's what you're seeing in these games. It's I don't know. I don't like seeing it. Arkansas plays Alabama A&M next year as their FCS opponent. That game's going to be in Fayetteville. They don't have any more FCS teams that are scheduled moving forward. They will. I'm sure they'll play more after 25. They just don't have any more of the games scheduled. I think a lot of that is because they're waiting to see what the SEC is going to do with this 9-game schedule. The SEC has always been a proactive conference, Christina. And I wish they would be proactive about this. Say, hey, no more of our teams playing these games against FCS teams. I doubt it happens. You know, the Big Ten, they've been proactive in their own ways too. The Big Ten, they had an FCS ban for a time, and then it got lifted. I think that was after they went to a 9-game conference schedule. I'd like to see the SEC get rid of these FCS games because I don't know that they're a lot of fun to watch. I don't know that the teams – I wonder what's being said in Arkansas's building this morning about, hey, what did we really learn about ourselves last night given the competition? Arkansas's ones, they would have gotten a more competitive scrimmage from Arkansas's threes than they got from UAPB.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess in your mind, would the ideal be to open with – because you want to have – ideally, I think most teams would want to have an opener – that was considered a lighter opponent so that you get that chance to kind of get right, or because you've been playing against yourselves for so long and you haven't been able to actually hit people really. Mm-hmm. And now you finally get to, and so you want a little bit of an easier opponent. So would your preference be that they play, you know, a Sunbelt team or something like that the opener?
Yeah. Schedule. My preference is to have a better opening game. I don't like these. And I think coaches will tell you too, that the players have a harder time getting up for these types of games to begin the season than, say, like 2 years ago when Arkansas played Cincinnati in Fayetteville, and that was a big game that they were able to look at as, you know, the summer went along, or even, you know, and I know the COVID year was a little bit different, but they got to look forward to the Georgia game to open up the season. Those, I would like to see more marquee type games, and I think it would be better for college football to have more marquee type games in week one, because this is the only week where they don't have to go head to head with the NFL for attention. Now, I know that the NFL is being played on Sunday and college games are being played on Saturday, but put more marquee games, you know, front load your schedule with more marquee games. But Arkansas UAPB, because that was pretty rough last night. Christina Long, you can read her stuff at wholehogsports.com, Ethan's as well. We appreciate you guys being with us. Have a safe trip back to Fayetteville. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Rocky Boyman. He was on the call for ESPNU last night, and the Razorbacks beat UAPB 70-0. We'll have a discussion with him after another word from our sponsors.
Taste, sip, sample, and discover the very best restaurants and chefs Northwest Arkansas has to offer at the Bite Experience at the LPGA, a unique culinary experience on site at the Northwest Arkansas Championship. Tickets are available Friday, September 27th through Sunday, September 29th, offering access to the best golf viewing and food and beverage samples from over 30 local restaurants. You don't want to miss this. Tickets are available for $45 a day. Get yours before they sell out at BiteNWA.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about Bentonville Glass, which has been serving its community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can find them in Bentonville at 507 South Main or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Rocky Boyman was on the ESPNU call of Arkansas' 70-0 victory over UAPB last night at War Memorial Stadium. And he joins us now. Rocky, good morning. We appreciate you taking the time to talk with us.
Absolutely, Matt. It's a pleasure to be with you. And had that game not ended, Arkansas may have 170 points at this point right now.
Well, you know, and I was talking about this earlier. What happens if they don't take 10 minutes off the clock in the second half? I mean, you're looking at all kinds of school records This is going to be one of those games that you're going to see it mentioned a ton of times in the media guide. You know, for the rest of time, they probably win this game by 90 if they don't take the time off the clock.
They do. And look, I mean, that you know, team they play, God love them, you know, just a totally different tier of an Arkansas, right? And I know they went out there and played hard, but, you know, look, and I'm sure you guys have talked about it this morning, is you know, unbelievable it was a win that was and the total domination. I think that the question is still going to be, okay, great, but what's that going to look like, you know, when we play Oklahoma State next week? What's that going to look like in a couple weeks when we play at Auburn? You know, those kind of things, I think those questions are probably still lingering in the minds of Arkansas fans.
I did my homework on you, Rocky. This is the second time that you have called an Arkansas season opener. Do you remember the first?
I do. I remember being down there. Was it against South Alabama or was it Louisiana Tech?
Louisiana Tech. And where I'm going with this was it was a very different season opener. And that one, it's a total nail biter. Arkansas scored a touchdown very late in that game to win. Totally different set of circumstances last night.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it was. Look, and it was great. And, you know, I think it's good to have those games. I know that just, look, I coach my son's youth team. So look, you kind of need some of those games here and there just to hit in there and get some work and feel good about yourself and get some of the wrinkles kind of ironed out a little bit. And I think for what it was, Arkansas did everything they should have done in that game. Mm-hmm. And still, I think you take a lot of good things out of that game for sure.
You're going to see another one of these matchups tomorrow when Ole Miss plays Furman. You're in Oxford to cover to call that game now. SEC FCS games, what is your take on this? Are they, and I understand why they're played, and you mentioned that you need to have some of these games to make you feel good, but they're such mismatches. I just wonder what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I mean, there's a school of thought out there of, look, just pay these schools and not have to play the game. But I think the other side of it is, if you're Arkansas Pine Bluff, for instance, or you're, you know, whatever, you're going to remember playing a big boy school, right? You're a couple years, 10 years from now, 12 years from now, you're going to watch an Arkansas game, be like, man, we were out on the field with those guys. Boy, it didn't go great, but we went at them. And so I think there's memories that are made there. And then I think from an Arkansas perspective, it's an opportunity to build depth. And as you well know, Matt, I mean, the SEC is all about how much depth do you have? Because guys are going to get banged up. Guys are going to need a breather. And the only way to get good at anything, how did you get good at radio? You did it over and over and over, right? Same thing with football players. You got to get out there and get real world live bullet experience. In a game like this, allows a team like Arkansas to go ahead and do that.
Most days after a shutout win, we would be talking more about the defense than we are the offense. But just because of the uniqueness of what Petrino's offense did last night, that's obviously been the discussion. But you played linebacker at Notre Dame. You played in the NFL. I want to get your thoughts on the Arkansas defense and what you saw from them last night against UAPB.
It was domination. And again, I came into that game because I had – just in talking with the coaches and reading stuff and listening to podcasts, I knew this fan base and everybody was excited about the linebackers. Well, the linebackers didn't get to make many damn plays because the defensive line was making all of them. I mean, Nico Davier is a dude now. I mean, I liked him last year. I liked him even more. He's a guy that was like, okay, that guy clearly stands out, right? Mm. I mean, amongst even all the other, dominant performances out there. So I thought, the D-line was fantastic. Eric Gregory looked the real deal. I thought Landon Jackson, of course, looked great. Again, I would have liked to see, Brad Spence made some plays, but I didn't get to see much out of the linebackers as I wanted to because of how well the D-line played. But I thought they did great, and they did what they should have done against a team like that.
What you saw from them, how do you think that translate when they play a really old offensive line against Oklahoma State next week?
Yeah, it's going to be obviously it's going to be different. Use the opportunity to iron some things out and work on some technique things, and it's not going to look the same. But again, I feel like I know good players when I see them, and I look on that D line especially. I see good players that I think would be able to compete against any opponent, any SEC opponent. Again, especially those defensive ends and a couple of those D linemen. So I think that'll translate, and I think there's experience there. That's ultimately what it comes down to. And while the Arkansas linebackers maybe don't have as much experience at Arkansas because they've come in from different places, they have playing experience, right? I mean, Xavier Sory, he's got some experience. Switzer has some experience. So I think that's a good thing that'll translate well.
I don't know that scoring on 10 consecutive possessions necessarily surprises when you see the type of talent difference between Arkansas and Pine Bluff. But to do it in the season opener, I think that is probably my biggest takeaway because, a lot of times in the season opener, you're going to have, I mean, heck, even Arkansas, their first drive, they fumbled the ball out of bounds. They could have thrown an interception on the first play. But you're going to have turnovers. You're going to have, mistakes penalty-wise. You didn't see a lot of – I don't think you saw any pre-snap penalties against Arkansas last night. You saw one hold that nullified a long catch by Satania.
Yeah.
But it seemed like they were – extremely prepared for the first game of the season.
I agree with you 100%. Yeah. I mean, a game like that. Yeah. Usually first games, no matter who you play, just have, mental mistakes and procedural stuff. And they were able to settle in and play well. And the flip side is, Matt, we could be sitting here talking like, boy, they played a lesser caliber opponent and squeaked by, or man, the offense looked terrible. No, they did what you should have done against an opponent like that. You come out, you settle in and you take it to them. And that's what they did. They didn't have very many self-inflicted mistakes. And so I think that certainly says something.
The preseason's always, for coaches, it's about accentuating the positives. You don't hear them, drone on a whole lot about the things that they're seeing that they don't like. But something that's stood out to me with Sam Pittman this year is that there just seems to be a real confidence in this team that he's coaching. You talked to him before the game the other day. I wonder what were the takeaways that you had from speaking with him?
No, I agree with you. And I think, and obviously the media and everybody's made a big deal of Bobby Petrino coming in. And it is a big deal. But I just feel like, you know, good coaches, good leaders, good, and I think I even said this on the broadcast last night, you know, good CEOs of companies aren't the ones that try to do everything and try to think they're smart and put all this on their plate. No, the best ones know how to delegate well, because you can't do everything. You can't, you know, worry about the ins and outs of the offense and the offensive line blocking scheme. And then, boy, what's the defense doing on third long? And then, boy, my culture and how do we make sure I'm instilling this? And then we've got to recruit. You know, there's just so much you got to do. And it just seemed in talking with Sam, he's now in a good spot where he trusts, you know, both Bobby and Travis, says, look, okay, you guys do what you do there with those two things. I'm going to be in charge of the roster, right? And the roster is built, and he gets the last word on that and all the things. And that's no small task, right? So he's in charge of that. And then just kind of being the head man on the team and the big decisions and, you know, the pivotal points of the game, making the call. And I think he just seems more comfortable now that he has confidence in both those coordinators that they're going to do a good job. They're going to be prepared. That's not a question at all. And now he can focus on doing the important things, which is being the head coach.
Rocky Boyman with us for a few more minutes. Was on the call last night when Arkansas beat UAPB on ESPNU. Put your shoulder pads back on for a minute, Rocky. As a linebacker defending Talon Green, how difficult would it be?
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm in the booth now. I don't have to do such things anymore. But it was, you know, a guy like that, as I even said last night, it's just tough because you can have the perfect defense called. You can be in the right spot. You can have all the guys covered up. You can do everything as it's supposed to happen. And a guy like that just flat makes a play. I mean, that touchdown run he had was absolutely incredible. And again, as I said, I mean, D coordinators right now are like, how do we stop that? You know, like, you know, so that's, I mean, his athleticism. And I think he settled in. I mean, you know, he early on, okay, they tried the bomb early. I'm sure there were some jitters there. But then he really settled in. That second to last drive before the half was certainly his best drive. He went 3 for 3 for 55 yards and a touchdown, I believe. And he just finally looked comfortable. So I think he played well. Now, look, the question is, you know, as I'm watching that game, okay, he's not going to have that amount of time to throw here next week. He's not going to have that amount of time to throw against Auburn. So for him, it's going to be, you know, getting the ball out of his hand, right? Getting the ball, where's the open guy in the scheme and getting the ball out of his hand. I thought Malachi Singleton, by the way, was phenomenal at that. That boom, back foot hit, there's the guy, ball's out of his hand. So I think as Talon Green develops, you know, that's the thing you want. If you're Bobby Petrino, you want to see further development, that and the quick decision making, the quick processing, because the athleticism and the just sheer playmaking ability, which you have to have, is absolutely there.
And I felt like, you know, Petrino, we know Petrino's going to put his quarterbacks in the right position to make plays. He's an incredible play caller. And say what you want to about his head coaching. Throughout his entire career, the play calling has been top shelf, elite. If Green can hit some of these passes, it feels like Arkansas could, like you said, give some of these SEC defensive coordinators a little bit of a nightmare.
It can. I mean, the addition of Jaquindon Jackson, I think, is the home run. I think that guy's a legit NFL looking running back. He runs hard. He's big. Runs behind his pads. You know, so you can, you know, you obviously got to have a ground game in the SEC. That's a staple of an Arkansas program. But you know as well as I did, Matt. I mean, last, you know, 3 years is great. As much as I love KJ Jefferson, just, you weren't able to stretch the field.
Yeah,
right. Weren't able to pick up those chunk yards plays, and you know those two things in particular is what Bobby Petrino does. He finds ways to stretch the field, puts his quarterback in advantageous positions. And he feeds the studs, finds the best players, and you got some good wide receivers out there, and finds ways to get the ball in their hands.
Let's get you out of here on this. The big game, or one of the big games this weekend, is the Irish going down to Aggieland to play Texas A&M. Hey, you know, it's the first time they've been to Kyle Field since your senior year. What do you remember about playing there? What makes it difficult? And do you think Notre Dame can go on the road and pick off the Aggies this week?
Matt, I'm trying to forget that game. I played terrible. We lost. It was hotter than hell. It was awful. So thank you for reminding me. No, it's of course a tough place to play. And, you know, and we went there. Bob Davies, our head coach, he was the former D beloved D coordinator there, and we just played like crap. But I think the Irish will play, I think, much better than we did on that particular day. I'm worried about the offensive line. As you well know, well, they're starting offensive tackle, torn pec, and they got, a three-star freshman starting in his place. And then you take into consideration Mike Elko. He knows what Riley Leonard does well, and he knows what he doesn't do well. So, as you know, being his former coach, so I think that's going to be a tough game. But you look at that schedule, the Irish win that game. They are set up really, really nicely. I mean, they don't play near the schedule that a lot of these SEC teams do. So you got to go. There's a big game, open the season, tough environment. You got to go win that thing. And I think things are starting to shape up well for the Irish if they do.
It'll be a lot of fun to watch that. You know this better than anybody. Notre Dame brings out everybody's best. We're going to see that when they come to Fayetteville next year. Yeah. They have to get up for every single game because they know the opponent is going to get up for them. That ought to be a lot of fun watching 102,000 people up for them in College Station tomorrow night. Rocky, we appreciate you being with us. Good luck on your call tomorrow night in Oxford, and we'll hope to talk to you soon.
Matt, let's do it again, man. Thanks so much.
All right, appreciate it. Rocky Boyman from ESPN. And we appreciate you being with us today on our podcast. We'll be back on Tuesday. Quick programming note, we're not going to have a podcast on Monday on Labor Day, so we'll be back on Tuesday as we start to look forward to Arkansas and Oklahoma State. Hope you come to our website at wholehogsports.com. In the meantime, and we'll see you next week. Have a great Labor Day weekend, everyone.